Welcome back. For this session, Chris Reisner is joining us. Chris is going to talk about Java websites on Azure. Chris and I have spoken at a number of events together. We've spoken for Build and TechEd, and now called Ignite, which is happening in May. In case anyone is going to be at Ignite in May in Chicago, I'll be there speaking about Java and also some of the finer points of partnerships we have with IBM and Oracle and Azure and a few other partners as well. But for now, Chris is going to talk about Java websites, and welcome, Chris.
Sounds great. Thanks again for having me, Brian. I appreciate it. It's great to be here. So as Brian said, we're going to be talking about Azure websites and Java support for Azure websites. We'll start by talking about exactly what websites are, and then we'll talk about how you can set up Java websites. We'll talk about different deployment options, talk about how you can scale up and down your website applications, running backend jobs using web jobs, site slots for deployment, traffic control, and then some additional features that we won't go into all the demos on. So like I said, the first thing we'll talk about is exactly what Azure websites is. So Azure websites is essentially a very easy way to host web applications written in several different languages inside of Azure. And currently, we've got support for .NET, Python, Node.js, Java, and PHP. And we'll start this off by actually creating a website and seeing how we can turn on Java support. So here we are in the Azure portal. And the first thing I will do is just go down to the bottom and go to New, and we'll choose Web and Mobile. And we'll choose a website. Now, I've already got some hosting plans created, but if this is the first time you've gone into the portal and you need to create a new hosting plan, you basically, well, let me close that. We go to Create New, and we can choose what sort of tier we want. And there's a lot of different tiers that have different options as far as how many cores, how much memory, some of the other different settings as far as how many instances you can have that you can choose from. There's also a free tier and a shared tier as well. So, yeah.
Sorry, I just want to mention one thing. This is the new portal. The portal that I've been showing you up to now, that I've been referring to the portal, is an old portal. So do not adjust your screens. This is actually a newer portal that Chris is showing you, but it is the same functionality, essentially.
Right, so this is the preview portal. A little later on in this presentation, we will actually return to the portal you guys have been seeing, which is still a currently portal. This is, you know, new and different, I guess you'd say. Yeah. So I've already got some hosting plans created, so I'm just going to choose from one that I already have. So I'll just go ahead and choose one of the standard ones I've already created. And it already has the pricing tier, the resource group, etc. So all I need to do now is just generate a name. So let's call this My Java MVA Site. It's going to make sure the name's available, and then I can kick off the process by creating it. Now this is going to take anywhere from about 30 seconds to a few minutes to finish creating. Instead of waiting for that, we'll just go into a site I've already generated. So I'll go into this MVA1 site. It'll take a few seconds to load. And the first thing we get to is kind of this dashboard for the site. And I'm going to go ahead and click on the browse button momentarily. There we go. And I get taken to this page. The website has been successfully created. It's running. And this is just kind of the boilerplate web page. So I'll go back into the portal, or for my site. I'll go to All Settings. And we'll look at a few of these different areas as we go through this module. But for now, I'm going to go to Application Settings. And inside here, the first thing we see is the language support for the web application or the website. Now, by default, .NET is turned on and PHP is turned on. Java and Python are both turned off. Now, because of how we handle the routing of the web traffic, in order to turn Java on, we basically have to turn the others off. So when we switch from off over to 1.7.051, you'll see the other ones are grayed out, and then I get the option of what web server I want to use, whether it's Tomcat or Jetty. As soon as I save this and save my changes, it's going to take a few seconds, so we'll go over to a different application that already has this done. So we'll skip by this and go over here. And I'll go over to MVA2, another site I set up earlier, and I'd already turned on Java support. Essentially, once I turned on Java, what happened was the configuration for the website changed so that all of the web traffic basically go in a pass-through from IIS straight through to in this case, Tomcat. So if I go over here and look at the settings for this site and go to application settings, we'll see that Java's turned on and Tomcat is a server. Now, if I go to browse this site, we'll see that it says, hey, this Java-based web application has been created successfully. I've already done it. So let's go back to the slides for just a moment and talk about how we create our Java sites a little bit more. So what I just did was I activated Java via configuration. Now, essentially what that means is that when I created the site, I had just went into the UI for the administration of the site, and I said, go ahead and turn on Java and turn off everything else. By default, that sets it up with 1.7.051. And as we saw, we had two configuration options, one Tomcat and one Jetty. And by default, again, 32-bit is enabled, but we could choose 64-bit if we wanted to. Now, the interesting thing about setting or turning on Java via the UI is that it's actually using installs of those Java servers that are part of the VM image that's running my website. So I don't have actual full access to all the configuration information for that Java server. If you wanted full access to that, there's another option for installing your Java server. There's a web application application gallery you can choose from when you're creating applications inside the Azure portal. And in addition to many, many other things, we have the full servers for Tomcat and Jetty available there. And when you install from here, it's actually installing that full web server into your web application's file structure. So you can then go in and change the configuration files as needed. There's also the ability to do custom creation, and this gives you the ability to install your own JVM and your own Java server. That's a little bit more complicated and a little bit deeper than what we'll look at today, but suffice to say, you basically just need to install those JVM files or the Java server files yourself to your file share, and then change your web configuration to point towards the JVM and the server that you want to use. So let's take a quick look at how we could use the gallery to create a new application. So I'm back at the dashboard. I'm going to go to the marketplace. And as I said before, there's a lot of different stuff in here we can choose from. We're going to go over to web, and I'll just do a quick search for Java. And we'll see that we have Jetty and we have Apache. Again, we had an option before we installed or we set up Jetty or Tomcat using the UI, and that just used the built-in servers that are on the VM image. This, again, will actually install that full JVM into the file structure. So again, I get the same options for what hosting plan I want to use, all the other information I checked before. So I'll just say my Jetty server. And when I kick off this creation process, it's going to create a new website, it's going to install those files for me, and I'll be ready to go with a new Jetty web application. So the next thing we'll talk about is deployment. So far, all I've done was I basically have created a Java website, but I haven't deployed any files to it or put anything on there to actually have a website. When you want to deploy applications to Azure websites, you actually have a lot of different options for how you can do that. Some of these aren't going to make 100% of sense right now for Java, but we'll talk about the different options you've got. Essentially, there's a lot of source control repository systems that you can connect into a Java website so that when you push changes to those repositories, it'll automatically deploy them into your website. So stuff like Visual Studio Online, which offers TFS as well as Git, CodePlex, GitHub, and Bitbucket, they're all source control systems where you can check code in, and then if you want to, you can have that auto-deployed to a website. Dropbox is something more akin to, I'm just going to drop my files here, and then whenever I make changes, it'll push those changes to a website. Now, for Java, we have to compile the application. And currently, Azure Websites doesn't really have a way of taking the code and compiling that code and putting it out there in a way that really makes sense for us, since you have different options inside of a Java project about how you want to create a WAR file and stuff like that. So for Java, the easiest way to do things today is to actually export that WAR file or those files that we need locally and then move those files up into our web application. So we could use FTP for that, but in a few minutes we'll see me use a different methodology called site extensions. So let's go ahead and take a look at creating a new web application and deploying it into my website. So I'm going to go into Eclipse, and the first thing I'll do is I'll just create a new dynamic web project. This is nothing different than you do if you were just going to create a web application that you were going to host on any Java server out there. So we'll just call this My MVA App, and I'll just choose a different location to put this. And and we will go ahead and finish that application. Now, before we start in with the code on this application, I'm going to change a few properties in the build settings. First thing I'm going to do is just make sure we're including the JRE system library. And then I'm going to go down to the server, and I'm going to say it that I tell it that I want to use Tomcat, because that's what I'm going to use locally, and that's what I'm deploying to inside of my Azure website. So now the next step is I need to actually add some content to my web application. So to do that, I'm just going to create a simple new JSP file. We'll just call this index.jsp. So let's first change the title really quickly. And the next thing we'll do is we'll just put a little bit of code in here that actually uses Java, because right now this is really just HTML. So I'm just going to copy and paste a few things over here really quickly for us. First thing is I'm just going to add a utility library that I'm going to use to create a date object. And then I'm going to create a data object, and then down here in the actual body of the content, I'm going to say hi MVA, and then I'm going to output that date. So every time we refresh the page, we should see a new date. So now let's go ahead and run this application locally. So just get it run on server. It's going to restart my server because I used it a little while ago. And then we should see the website pop open. So we see hi MVA, there's the date right there. So now the next step is to get this application into Azure. So I'll go ahead and I will export my web content into a WAR file. And we'll just put this somewhere I've been using before. So we'll say my MVA app. And that's exported. The next step is for me to go back to the portal and make sure the rest of my application is ready to go. So I'm going back to my MVA2 app, website right here. Now I'm going to go down to extensions. As I commented earlier before, there's other options for deployment like FTP and all those other source control systems. We could grab the FTP information right here and just connect via FTP, but I want to use site extensions because it's actually pretty cool, some of the stuff it offers. So I don't have any site extensions initially. I need to go ahead and add one. So once I'm in here, I can choose between a bunch of site extensions. There's some really interesting things in here, like doing site replication, adding in PHP or MySQL administration. I'm going to use the site admin tools. So it'll take a few seconds, and then it's going to install those. Now that they're installed, I can go ahead and browse to them. And essentially, this is sort of a debug console. And one of the abilities I get here is I can actually drag and drop files right into my website's folder structure. So I'm going to go ahead and go to the debug console. And it'll take a few seconds to kind of figure out where it's at. Now that I'm there, I'm looking at the file structure for my website. I'm going to go into site, www.root, and then web apps. With Tomcat running on here, Tomcat's actively monitoring this folder for WAR files that if I drop in, it will handle decompressing and then basically setting up that web application. So let's go ahead and grab that web application. And I'm just going to drop it right in here. And it should take a few seconds, but in just a second, we should see that our application is deployed. I think I grabbed the wrong thing, possibly. Let's go ahead and check that out. So we should be able to go to my MVA app. And after it loads the site, we should be able to see the same page we had running locally. Maybe not. Let's go back and make sure it did that correctly. We'll try and remove these files and do that again. So that didn't seem to work. Let me go ahead and try a different site and make sure we can make this actually work.
So I should say, while Chris is doing that, I just want to mention in the Q&A, there were some some questions about the sample app. It is available on GitHub. If you do a search on Azure Chat for Java, GitHub. Say Azure Chat for Java, GitHub. It should turn up there in the links, and if everyone could click on it, that would help bring it up in the links in the search engines. So there's a dual purpose there. I'd appreciate it. But yeah, it's there. It's on GitHub. All the documentation about setting up the actual sample app is there, including setting up the Azure services and linking to them using the code, and how to actually deploy the code. It's a Maven project to run that script. So,
thanks, Brian. Thanks for taking that. While he's been talking, I'm just setting up a different site that we had running to hopefully we'll be able to deploy to that without any issues. All right, so the MVA one we looked at earlier, it's been set up with Java now. So we'll go back in here. We're going to go to site admin tools for that site. And once that loads again, we'll go back into the directory structure. Navigate into the root again, go into the web apps folder. Now, if we go grab our WAR file again, hopefully this will work.
By the way, I'm not sure that anyone noticed, but Chris is working 100% on a Mac as well. One of the beauties of working on Azure is you can do code deployment, everything from multi-platform. So.
Absolutely, and one of the kind of the differences between websites and everything else is that you know I don't have to be using Eclipse. I could be using anything. I could any Java editor you might be using would be fine.
In fact, we had a customer recently who they had a Java WAR file. That's all they had. They didn't have the source code for the application. It was just a package, and they just wanted to run it on Azure. And you know, they just want to run it in the cloud and see how it works, see what kind of configurations they need to do. And you know, they were able to just go into websites, drag and drop this into a website, and start working with it. So
that's right. I'll try one more thing, and then we'll just go ahead and move on. Let's see. Just try adding this to the default documents and see if that. It's a little complicated.
It's the web interface.
So we'll just try getting that to run one more time. Well, it doesn't look like it wants to work, so we'll just continue on, and we'll deal with that a little bit later when we get to the next deployment issue, or next deployment.
Sure.
So the next thing we'll talk about is scaling out our website. Now, when we created the website, we were able to choose a hosting plan, which gave us the option of, do we want to use a, you know, what size VM do you want to use, how many cores, how much memory. But essentially, when you're building a web application, when you start to get a lot of heavy use, you may need to scale up to multiple virtual machines running your website. And then you also want to be able to handle scaling down. Now, there's two options for doing that with Azure websites. There's manual scaling, which is essentially you going in and saying, hey, you know, I've only got one instance running now. I'm going to add another instance because I'm getting a lot of use. Alternatively, when you, you know, when you see use drop down and using the metrics in the dashboard, you can then say, hey, I need to go back down to one instance. However, you probably don't want to be sitting at the computer all day long, you know, checking usage and then scaling on your own. So Azure has something called autoscale. And essentially what this allows you to do is set criteria for when you might want to scale up from, say, 1 to 3 instances of your website, or maybe up to even many more. And then when the usage goes back down, you can automate that scaling back down to just a few and just down to 1. And there's a lot of different ways you can set up this auto-scaling as far as different metric goes. If your web application uses a lot of CPU, well, you can say, if my CPU is between a certain percentage, you know, scale me up. And then when it drops back down, scale down. And you can also do that based off memory or disk queue length, HTTP queue length, as well as data in and data out. Let's go ahead and look at how we can handle scaling manually and both through the auto scale. So I'm going to go back to my application here, and I will just go to the scale tab. And inside here, if we go down to the bottom, first thing we'll look at is if we turn auto scale off. This is a situation where I can sit here and I can drag the slider and I can choose between 1 and 10 instances of my web application running, and it'll scale up and down, you know, basically whenever I want to. But again, I don't really want to sit here and do this all the time, so instead you can set up this, in this case, performance-based auto-scaling. And here I can choose my range. Maybe I want at least 2 instances always running my site, and maybe as many as 5. And then we have this default metric right here where it's going to go off the CPU percentage, where if it's between 60 and 8, it'll deal with scaling up or down. You can also add additional metrics. So we can do things for, like I said, all these other factors, and you can set thresholds for those. You can say how many minutes passed or how many minutes should it take to cool down. You can choose all of these and add many different scaling metrics into your website.
And cool down means scaling back. Obviously.
Exactly right, yep. Yeah. Now, there's a couple things to know about the scaling. First of all, if you're using a website, but you're also using data storage backend, so perhaps a SQL database, a MySQL database, anything else, this is only going to scale that web tier. So if scaling the database is also something you need to worry about, that needs to be handled separately. And depending on what sort of storage mechanism you are using with Azure, that could be handled automatically for you, or that may be something you have to address. The other issue is that scaled up and down isn't instantaneous. So if the usage of your web application drops below that CPU threshold, it doesn't mean that at that very instant it's going to scale down for you. It's going to check it every once in a while and figure out, you know, when it's appropriate to scale it back down or, again, to scale it up. Now, the next thing we'll talk about is web jobs. This enables an easy way for you to have back-end job application processing run separate from your actual website itself. So essentially here, what you have is you create executable code that you deploy as part of your web application, kind of separate, but part of your web application, and then you can either trigger this on demand, on a schedule, or even from as part of your web application if you need to kick off some back-end job. That job will run, and then you can get reported back saying, hey, this is done. Now, support for web jobs includes command files, batch files, executables, PowerShell, shell script, PHP, Python, and JavaScript. And that list does not actually include jars. However, when you create a web job, you essentially deploy a zip file, and that zip file contains whatever you want your job to do. So what you're able to do is include in that zip file a jar, and then for example, a batch file, which you use to use Java to run that jar. Remember that because you're on the website where you have Java deployed, you're able to call on that Java JRE to say, hey, run this jar, and then you can pass in whatever flags you might need to do. The next thing we'll talk about is deployment slots. So far, when we looked at the application, we've only created a single website, which we've tried to deploy to. And when it comes to most web applications, though, you really don't just have a production site. You usually have a production, maybe a staging, QA, maybe testing. It's usually a lot more than just production because you never want to deploy straight to production. You want to test things out first. So with deployment slots, what you're able to do is within the same website, you can say, go ahead and create another version of this website. Let's call it staging, for example. So then you can deploy your code to staging, check it, make sure it's working correctly. And then once you're happy with it, you can then essentially trigger a pushover and say swap the code between staging and production. So that staging version becomes the live version. Let's go ahead and look at how this works. So we'll go back to our web application here. And we'll go to deployment slots. Inside here, we don't have any slots because we just have the single version of our website. We'll go ahead and go to add slot, and we'll just call this staging. And we can call in configuration settings. I don't think I have any settings right now because I haven't added anything special to my site, but we'll go ahead and choose the original site to clone the settings from. We'll go ahead and choose OK. Now, behind the scenes, this is kind of doing the same thing as setting up that website before, except it's setting up another version of that website. So now if I click on my staging website, we can browse to it, and we'll see that whereas before we had mva1.azurewebsites.net, now we have the same thing, but we have dash staging in there. So this is actually a different URL for the website we're going to. So we'll give it just a second to make sure it gets up and running. While that's happening, let's jump back over to Eclipse, and we'll just make a small change here. We'll call this version 2, and we'll go ahead and we'll deploy our web application. Or we'll export it, rather. So we'll use the same name, and we'll go ahead and export it there. Now we'll go back there. Okay, so we see the staging page is loaded. So we'll go back, and we're going to do the same thing we did before and see if it works this time. We'll go to the All Settings. We'll go to Extensions. Because since this is a separate site, we need to add back in that that extension so we can deploy to it. Site Admin Tools. We'll give it another second for it to load up. And we'll browse into our tools. We'll go back to the debug console on the command. Go into sites. Go to wwwroot. Go to web apps. Now we'll try this one more time and see if it works.
Why don't I
use a different one? Well, I guess we'll just try this one and see if it works. Because I know I tested this one earlier and it did work, so we'll just have to see what happens. All right, so this one, we'll give this a shot and see if it actually works for this one, too. All right, so for whatever reason, when I created it before with the other sites, it wasn't working correctly, but it looks like this one is creating it correctly. So we see here that after I've dropped the WAR files in, Tomcat's actively monitoring these directories and says, oh, I see a WAR file, I'm going to go ahead and expand it and create the web application. So now what we should be able to do, so we'll go here and go to my MVA app. Great, so now we see the application's deployed and it's looking correctly, or it's running correctly. Now what we should be able to do though is, let's copy this URL and go back over here and go back to our normal application. Great. So as we saw before, because I had some issues, it didn't really deploy correctly. So let's go back to the portal. We'll go back to looking at our MVA1 staging application, and we'll go to the swap button. Now, I've only got 2 slots available. I've got staging and production. So it already knows that I'm in staging, so this is clearly the source, and I probably want to go to production because that's the only other place I can go. So I'll go ahead and say OK. And we can see the swapping bar at the top, so it says, hey, I'm going to swap now. And in just a moment, it should flip around, and we'll see it say that it's running. Great, so it's running. So now if I go back to the staging version, it's not working because it swapped the files that I had in the production version with the staging one. But now if I go to production, it's working fine. So we tested it in staging. It was working in staging, wasn't it working in production? And then we were able to swap it, so the staging code is live in production, and we know production is finally working. Let's go ahead and head back to the slides.
You planned all that to show a real-world example of a crash server and quickly replacing it with something in staging and fixing it, right?
You know, Brian, I don't want to take credit. In theory, the better example would have been production mostly working and only kind of not working, but I think it gets the point across. So the next thing we'll talk about is traffic control. Right now, all of our traffic is going to our single website, but Azure is running worldwide. We have data centers all around the world, several in this country, the United States that we're in right now, but of course several in other continents and in other countries. So there's a lot of scenarios where you want your application to run in more than one data center. Disaster recovery is obviously one that comes to mind. You know, what if a data center that we have our website in right now goes down, but I want my application to still work, I need it to run in another data center. Or what if I've got an application that I want to be accessible worldwide, but I want people to have the best performance possible. So if you're in the United States, I want you sent to a data center hosting my web app in the United States. If you're living in Europe and you go to my website, I want you going to a version of my website running in Europe. Likewise with Asia, Australia, etc. Well, with Traffic Manager, you have this ability. And essentially what we're able to do is we've got 3 different kinds of traffic routing we can do. The first is basically this disaster recovery methodology where we can say, if data center A goes down, send everyone to data center B. This is one where everyone will end up going to data center A unless there's an issue. But now, what about that scenario where I said, you know, different people in different countries or different continents should go to the data center closest to them? In that situation, we've got performance. And there, you'll basically be redirected to the data center that gives you the lowest latency connection. Then there's a third option, which is round robin, which is where you can basically say connection, or you know, request one should go to data center one, request two should go to data center two, et cetera. So we'll go ahead and look at that. And we'll also look at something called testing in production. So we'll go back to the portal, we'll go back to our site, and we'll leave the staging version and go back to our production version. And inside here, the first thing we'll look at is traffic routing. Now, this wasn't the traffic manager thing I mentioned. This is something basically considered testing in production. And what this would allow us to do is, let's say I have a new change in my application that I want to test out or provide a small amount of traffic on to maybe test and see if it converts better, if the performance is good, etc. Well, what I could do is create a separate slot specific for that version of the site, and then I could say, send 1% of the traffic to that site and then the rest to production. Or maybe I want to do, you know, 25% there and 75% in the right in the other version. Then whatever methodology you have for tracking the analytics and usage of your site, you can compare your slot 1 versus slot 2 version to see what is best. Now, the other thing I mentioned, which is Traffic Manager, isn't available in the preview portal yet. So we're going to go ahead and jump over to the current portal that you've been seeing all day to go ahead and have a look at Traffic Manager. So once this loads, we're going to create a new Traffic Manager profile. And a profile essentially allows us to load balance or split traffic or send traffic across different cloud services or different websites. So the cloud service stuff you've seen today already, you could use the Traffic Manager for that as well. So I'll just call this MyMVA Traffic. And here's where we can choose the load balancing method. Whether we want it to be performance, so what data center am I closest to, or round robin, so send me to one, then the other, then the other, or failover, so if data center one goes down, send me to data center two. I'll just go ahead and choose performance, and we'll wait a second for that to get generated. We'll go to MyMVA traffic, and we'll go to endpoints, and we'll go ahead and add some endpoints. Now, we're going to go ahead and change this from cloud service to website, because I've been doing websites, but let's say I've got my MVA 1 site that I created earlier. Now, I'm only concerned with the US right now. So I've got a site in the US, and then I've also got one in the East US, so I'll add that one. Now I'm basically covered in the Western United States and the Eastern United States. So I'll go ahead and create that. And in the back end, that's going to set it up so that Traffic Manager knows to send where to check people, or when to send people to. Now if I go over to the Configure tab, I'll see I have this DNS name. Now this is the DNS name you'd basically take and put in your DNS records as a CNAME to whatever DNS you want to send to. So behind the scenes, when a user out there goes to your DNS, your web application, your DNS will route them to this Traffic Manager instance, which will then figure out where do I need to send this user, in this case based off performance. So if we go ahead and go to this URL, we should be taken momentarily to the basic page. Which it'll take us, there we go. So it's set up and it now knows how to redirect traffic. And since we're recording this in the Western United States, it took me to the Western United States instance of my website. Now, one other thing to know is that when you are first redirected to this Traffic Manager instance, you're given a DNS record which indicates where you need to go. So which actual data center am I going to view the website? And the time to live for that is controlled right here with this DNS time to live. Now, the lower this value, which I think the lowest you can do is 30 seconds, the more often your computer will, somebody's computer will have to go back and check with this Traffic Manager instance to figure out where they should go. The higher this value is, the less often they'll check. So if you have something where you want someone to be redirected to the next available server, you know, as soon as something might happen, you'd want a lower value. Let's go ahead and head back to the slides. So the last thing we'll talk about is a bunch of additional features. Now these are also really cool features and capabilities of Azure websites, but we're just not going to go through them at a super high length. The first one is backup. When you're building applications in the web or anywhere else, it's really important to have backups and understand how you can what your restore options are whenever you're building something. So with websites backup, you can automate backup of any optional databases that are connected, the website files themselves, and then any website settings. And what this basically enables you to do is every so often at whatever schedule you dictate, it'll take all of these files and copy them over to a storage account. And then at any juncture that you want, you can then take those backups and restore them to your website for whatever reason you might need. The next capability is something called hybrid connections. let's say you're building out, you want to add something to the cloud, but you need to store your data in your own database, in your own data center. Or you have a web service that's legacy that's running in your data center that you really need to connect to from the cloud. Well, there's a lot of possibilities and ways you can connect from Azure into your data center, into your on-premise. So a lot of VPN options, there's ExpressRoute, there's different ways. Hybrid Connection Manager is a really easy way to set up this connection from your websites onto the on-premise. And essentially the way this works is you create a hybrid connection in Azure, you specify, or you get a URL that you can then access from your website's code. You then install a Hybrid Connection Manager within your own data center, which connects to that SQL Server, that web service, whatever you might have. From your website then, when you talk to that hybrid connection URL, it's automatically going to funnel you through to your on-premise data center. And that Hybrid Connection Manager is something that you can control from an administration perspective. So if you want to apply group policy, if you want to be able to lock this down, control who can access it, you can do all of that. And it's a really easy way to set up these connections without worrying about really advanced firewall and VPN configurations. Another feature is a Redis cache service. So Redis is a very popular cache capability that is, you know, available anywhere. It's open source. Azure has a Redis as a service capability. This is a fully functioning Redis cache cluster with master-slave configuration, available up to 26 gigabytes with SSL support. This is really easy to set up with inside of Azure and then take advantage of from your websites, your cloud services, anywhere you might want to. Another feature is something called Application Insights. Now this is like an analytics tool you can use to get information about the performance of your application, how it's being used, what browsers are accessing and what versions of those browsers, how many HTTP errors have you had, how many requests have you hit, where are the requests coming from. It's a really, really cool utility to use when you're deploying websites to Microsoft Azure. Now, there's a couple different ways to use this, but the easiest way from a Java perspective is you just drop some JavaScript into the JSP pages you're going to deploy as part of your application, and then that will automatically handle the callback into Application Insights. And then in the Azure portal, you can go to Application Insights and see all these great graphs that describe usage and all these other metrics. There's a few other features we'll mention really quickly before we close. The first one is remote debugging. This gives you the ability to, with your website, with your application deployed in websites, connect via Eclipse or a command line utility and actually debug your Java application running inside of websites. To do that, it actually makes sense of makes use of WebSockets, which you can also use on your own to do real-time communications from your Java applications. Now, I talked about this a little bit when I mentioned Traffic Manager and doing DNS and domains. Well, with Azure websites, you can actually use custom domains as well. So if you're running in the basic or standard tier, you can apply a custom domain for whatever domain you own to that application. So your own custom domain will point to Azure. Now, by default, whatever the URL of your website, so in this case, mva1.azurewebsites.net, that has SSL applied to it. So you can access that via HTTPS. But if you're using custom domains, you're also able to use SSL via either SNI or IP specific. Now, we already saw one site extension where I was able to install the site admin tools and then deploy using the debug console. There's a lot of other site extensions that enable you to do other things. I think I mentioned the PHP admin, the MySQL admin. There's even a site extension to get the Go language running on top of websites. So there's a lot of really cool capabilities there. The last feature I'll mention is access control. And this is part of that new portal where you're able to actually control who within your organization has access to different things within your website. So if you only have specific people that should see the billing information for your website, for example, you can lock that down. If only specific people should be able to actually shut down or restart your website, you can control that as well. You can really get very granular with permissions that are applied to each person in your organization. So I think in this module, you know, we've gone over the Azure websites capabilities, we've talked about the different options for running and setting up Java inside of Azure websites, and we've talked about all the different features that websites provide for web applications, site slots, or deployment slots rather, scaling, all the site extensions, stuff like that. So hopefully you should have a good idea now of how you can use Java on top of Azure websites.
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Chris. One question we had was, can I use MS Deploy? I think you did cover that. Can you use MS Deploy to deploy Java apps to Azure websites?
I'm not entirely super up on MS Deploy. I don't know if you can.
Me neither, actually. Yeah.
Isn't MS Deploy, as I understand it, I think MS Deploy is primarily used as part of Visual Studio to do web deployments, but I'm not entirely certain if that'll work for Java.
It would be tough to get it into Visual Studio anyway.
Well, the one thing I didn't talk about in detail was that in this situation, I just showed taking my Java application where I'd already exported the WAR file and just, essentially just dropping the file. So essentially that really FTP route. Now that's, building applications like that is entirely acceptable, but a really popular thing, which I think we're going to see in the next module, is using, build servers like Jenkins and stuff like that, where you actually have a system that's going to build your application. If you want to set up continuous integration, that's really important. And what you're able to do if you want to from something like Jenkins is, you can set up a post-deployment script, whether that's using FTP or check into one of those source control systems, which will then trigger a deployment from your website. Right. So there are a lot of options outside of just, drag and drop your files over.
Yeah, you can have a full suite, and that's what we're going to be covering in the next session. So we're going to be talking about continuous integration and DevOps tools that are all Java-based for deploying things from wherever to Azure cloud services, actually. Now, that session itself, I wouldn't expect that to last a full hour. I'm guessing more like half an hour, that'll be our last session of the day.
Great.
So we'll take a 10-minute break, and we'll come back and do this. So thank you very much, Chris.
Absolutely. Thank you, Brian.